Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Sometimes I think you're involved with bad things. Are you?
Oh, ma. Beneath a rugged exterior, Larry Sheely was a nice guy.
Are you?
You know me, I'm gonna be fine.
Putting on a good show.
That's professional.
He's just been given his big break.
There's a certain witness with psychological defects. And I want him held on to.
But he's about to get...
He's kidding.
An even bigger surprise.
Hello.
Salute.
Oliver Trinke was on his way to the top till everything changed.
Daddy really misses your mommy, kid. I miss it too, especially right now. Oh, shit.
Will someone please shut that girl up?
You better shut up!
Hello, Patreon pals, and welcome along to a hellscape you created by your own divine intervention. My name is Tim Batt, a changed man.
And I'm Guy Montgomery, more or less the same. Tim, good morning.
Good morning.
Describe yourself to me. Physically,
I
want you to work from the inside out. I want a vague overview on the state of your internal organs, all the way up to the scruff on your chin, and maybe the state of your eyes and mouth.
You know how when you eat too much, like, or you have too much beer, and you feel like there's a lot of wheat in your system, and it's not a good feeling? You feel heavy. Mm. And sort of persistently nauseated and just not tippy top. That's how I would describe my guts. Just a small amount of dull pain in my temples, but not too intense. Mouth run amok. Eyes dry and tired and scratchy. Hair on my chinny chin chin, unkempt. And I'm currently sitting in a dressing gown.
Do you know
in the best way.
From the first thing you said, I knew for sure that you were in a dressing gown. There was just no possible way you could be in anything else.
No getting around it.
Isn't that interesting?
Dressing gown.
I love knowing that. I love the intimacy between us that I knew that. Just from the sound of your voice, I thought Tim's in a dressing gown right now.
He is.
A thin piece of cloth separating, you know, yourself from Adam.
This one's pretty thick, actually. It's a thick
boy. Sort of, it's kind of felty, right? Like those blankets you put on top of your bed. There's that sort of material. Yeah.
It's the one. Because it's been some time. It's been, I could probably give you the exact hours. 8-12 and another fucking... It's been about 16 hours since I completed the mission. The mission of watching Jersey Girl and Gigli back-to-back. Did you do it back-to-back, by the way, Guy? Or did you separate them off?
I did it back to back, but there are some details surrounding my screening, which I feel
run me through
irrelevant for context, and then we can get into yours because I think you did it. You know, you were your
it's pretty straight
dick and vagina, meat and potatoes,
yeah,
straight down the line.
Yeah,
I due to scheduling conflicts had to undertake the entire thing this morning, so I had a 5:30 a.m. call time.
Oh.
And
how was Set?
Set was not enthusiastic. You know, I was looking around the place. There were a lot of dead and terrified eyes looking back at me.
You poor bastard.
I tried to watch Jersey Girl first.
Yeah.
But it was too early and time was quite precious, and I could not find a means of watching it from my computer.
Uh-huh. Right.
I couldn't rent it because...
it's so hard to find, eh?
It was,
I had the same issue. It's so
it was
hard
infuriating.
To find.
I turned on a VPN and rifled through like a million different Netflix countries. Jersey yeah. Girl, as it turns out, not available in India, Argentina, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, or America. And then, yeah, YouTube and Amazon wouldn't let me rent it because I didn't have an American credit card.
It's a real, man, we walked the same path.
So I thought, well, I don't have the time to, you know, troubleshoot this now. So I'm actually going to start with Zhili.
Yeah.
Which is available on Indian Netflix. Not, however, in America.
of course.
Yeah. And so I did that. And then afterwards, I ran into exactly the same brick wall I had before with Jersey Girl. So I found a bootleg sort of chaptered copy on YouTube for free gives you about 45 minutes of the movie. And then the uploader, for whatever reason, decided it was not worth the trouble. So stopped uploading the movie after 45 minutes, which means I pieced together the rest of the film from the movie. There were 12 movie clips.
What the fuck, man?
That they had withdrawn and put up. And I feel like it was a very frustrating screening experience.
This is some sloppy fucking work, Montgomery.
I feel like I got the thrust of the film.
No way, man. That's fucked. Unbelievable.
Not for
I
want
feel very alone. I feel so alone right now.
I was afraid of this. I really gave it quite a lot of time and effort, and I just couldn't crack it. And then by the time that YouTube had told me by the time that the YouTube series I was watching deferred to like the premium sort of legitimate clips that have been put up by some channel called Movie Clip or whatever, it was just too... The task was gargantuan. So yeah, you've probably seen about 45 minutes of Jersey Girl that I have not.
I'm so dark on this. I would prefer if you had have like watched neither and just went, what a great goof on YouTube. I've seen nothing.
I would also prefer that, funnily enough.
Yeah. So let me get this straight. What did you see of Jersey Girl?
I saw all the way up to...
What, have you watched all of either movie?
Yeah, I saw all of Zhili. That was the first thing I did
today. Oh, you saw
all of Zhili.
Okay, yeah. Okay, cool.
Zhili
cool.
was no worries.
But Zhili is a worry, though.
Yeah. Zhili of both the movies felt less like a movie. Jersey Girl, definitely. To me, felt like a sort of relatively poorly executed romantic comedy.
Get into the let's separate them out as a let's dig in. Let us begin. I watched Jersey Girl first, and I think that was definitely the correct decision. And I didn't mind it, eh? Like it was pretty fine. There's some interesting bits. For example, the fact that from memory this film was very heavily advertised, marketed on the fact that Jennifer Lopez is in it. And she dies in minute 9 of the film.
Yeah, I feel like I remember some sort of uproar, frustration at that being the case.
At the time?
In my peripheral memory of the gossip news cycle, yeah, Benefit were huge, obviously. Mm. And I sort of consumed quite a lot of gossip magazines around then, and I think people were cross that she was written out so quickly. But I am also inclined to agree with you, you know, the Jersey Girl presented as like, there's nothing original happening in it, but it was all sort of relatively competently put together.
Yeah, it was all fine. So what it is it's a story about Ben Affleck is a music publicist who they kind of contradict themselves because they say that he had his own company by 27 with 100 people working under him. But then later they kept referring to the firm that he worked for. So I don't know what the fuck's going on there. Maybe he's got his own little sub-branch of the wider firm. Anyways, very successful at a very young age. And then Jennifer Lopez is a literary agent, I think.
Yeah.
Or an editor. She's a book editor. And they get together, fall in love, have a baby. Jennifer Lopez dies at childbirth.
She has an aneurysm.
Very sad. Yeah.
It really was quite sad.
And then so Ben Affleck has to move back in. He's in New York City. He's in the Big Smoke, like kicking asses and taking names. So he moves back to live with his dad, who is George Carlin, which was just like, I was shocked. It was so good to see him.
Have you dug in to find how exactly? I mean, Kevin Smith is I think he's quite divisive now, but relatively well-respected comedy director.
Is Kevin Smith a bad man?
No, but I think he's like quite an eccentric, and he's sort of, you know, he's a rabble rouser. I don't think he has much time for the system, if you know what I mean. But that does remind me of a little known up and coming comedian called one George Carlin, you know, in his heyday.
Right.
But yeah, I was very surprised to see George Carlin pop up. And quite relieved, to be honest.
Yeah.
And
he gave a great performance.
Yeah. And he's a cool guy in the movie. And I tell you, he's not a cool guy, certainly to begin with. Ben Affleck.
Yeah, man, this piece of shit. He hates his daughter. He hates his daughter. There's no other way to put it. He keeps shirking his responsibilities of child rearing, leaving it up to George Carlin, who's an alcoholic, by the way. But they treat that in the movie like it's just a fun little character note. It doesn't really affect anything. And he's constantly driving, so...
Even when he first talks about it, he's sort of quite he's in quite a chipper tone when he says he's going to go to the bar. He says, I'm an alcoholic. And no one sort of says or addresses it in any way. It's just like, yep, that's my dad. And then at no point does his drinking prove to be a problem.
Yeah, it's a bit of a Chekhov's beer bottle or something, isn't it?
Sort of absolutely. A
consequence attached to it. So that's going on. What the fuck happens in the rest of the movie?
So after she grows up,
she gets older.
But more importantly, Ben Affleck. Did you describe him losing his job?
Oh no, I didn't. That's great.
That's in an incredible scene. So Ben Affleck, who has been outsourcing the childcare entirely to his father George Carlin, eventually George Carlin says, "I'm really actually getting annoyed about all this," and goes to work one day. He hasn't worked for about 2 weeks because he's been picking up so much slack behind Ben Affleck. And Ben Affleck puts his child in the car and drives to his dad, who's George Carlin, who's driving a street sweeper, that's his job, with the baby in tow, and says, I appreciate it if you let me know when you're leaving the house so that I don't have to drive my child to you to give, to, you know, look after inside of this street sweeper. And George Carlin essentially says, fuck you. And Ben Affleck is forced to, for the first time since becoming a father, you know, confront the realities of such a set of circumstances. And he's got a big announcement involving Will Smith. The movie's set in 1994 at this time. So Will Smith is on the cusp of becoming movie star Will Smith. But Ben Affleck refuses to believe that Will Smith will have any capital beyond the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and is actually quite dismissive of him as a, you know, as an upcoming entity. Obviously, that's played for laughs because the movie was released in 2004. So the assumption is the audience knows that Ben Affleck's instincts are wrong and Will Smith is about to have a moment.
Enjoying your summation. Please keep going.
Well, he's so sort of overwhelmed and tired. And Jason Biggs, who's his kind of, he essentially is Jason Biggsing it up as his assistant. It's like Will Smith he's at an event and there's 300 music journalists and all they want to see is Will Smith. I can't actually remember the specifics of what Will Smith is launching, but everyone's pretty excited.
Bang for Blood. What is he launching?
I honestly...
Fuck, what was it? Is it an album? No, is it a...
He was a bit... I mean, I know that Independence Day was about to come out.
I think it's about that, isn't it? Isn't it? It was like something to do with the release of the movie. Like there was a song that was getting released alongside the movie or something like that. Fuck, who knows? Something like that. It was something small that Ben Affleck... What's happening over there? Are you scouring through the film?
I want to play my favorite line of audio from the film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is it here. Hold on.
Is that Jazzy Jeff?
This is bullshit. Where's the Fresh Prince?
Will someone please shut that girl up?
That guy.
Will someone please shut that girl up?
Amongst the 300 journalists baying for blood, Ben Affleck goes out to say, hey, Will Smith isn't here yet, but everyone, it's going to be okay. He's already 45 minutes late himself. So this is a huge snafu. And it's just such a constructed, like, they're all the music journalists appear to be, they all are in perfect union, you know, they are unity. They are all one being. They all sort of make general hubbub at the same time, and then when Ben Affleck arrives, they all silence at exactly the same time. They all share an exact sense of humor. When the baby first appears on the side of stage crying, one of them says, is that DJ Jazzy Jeff? A pretty ordinary line that absolutely destroys in a way nothing I have written or improvised in my 8 years as a performer could even dream of approaching.
It's like unity in Rick and Morty. They're all a connected system of entities, these journalists. It's quite a terrifying concept when you think about it, especially because how quickly they turn on people. Like, all it took was a guy being a little bit late and bringing a loud baby for them to throw their anger.
The lack of empathy displayed by this body of journalists is incredible. So, the baby continues crying because it's a baby. What else is it going to do? And then that guy who delivers it, like, he barely lifts his eyes. He's looking at the ground off camera, just sort of as offhandedly as he can, says, would someone please shut that baby up? And honestly, that line belongs in Geely in the sense that it is the worst. It's incredible seeing the difference in performance of Ben Affleck between these two movies, because I thought in Jersey Girl he did a fine job. Like, I wasn't so frustrated by him. He was so wooden in Geely, you know?
Yeah.
And that guy, that journalist who's very upset by a baby crying, he's the worst performer in Jersey Girl of, you know, the 51% of it I saw.
Which is really saying something. What else happens in that movie? So the girl grows up. It kind of does a bit of a flash forward and suddenly she's
7 years later. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's not 7 years later. It says Gertrude, 7 years old or something as a time card. I remember seeing it and thinking, that's a weird way to say that.
Yeah. But from this, we are to believe that it is seven human years later.
That's so weird that Kevin Smith wrote this. I forgot. I kind of didn't like connect that up.
Wrote and directed. Yeah.
I guess that makes sense. There's a lot of all the Will Smith stuff and the celebrity references is just bloody dripping with Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith comes back into the movie in a moment reminiscent of Charlie Sheen's cameo in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. We're in a... Oh, so we haven't even got to the bit, have we? Sorry. So the reason why Ben Affleck loses his job is he... it's not like a hot mic, because I think he says it into the mic. He just kind of loses himself for a moment. He gets very annoyed, and he says, you know... I don't know why you people even care. It's Will Smith. His career is going to be around for less amount of time than it takes for the ink to dry on your shit rags that no one cares about anyway. And so as a result, boom, he's out. He's out to club. He's lost his job and his whole career based on that outburst. And then he actually like seems to be a bit happier. During this bit, right at the start, where he's got a bit more humility in his work, and he is doing things like, what does he do? He works, with George Carlin and his buddies in the construction sort of game.
Yeah, and he starts being a bit of like an inspiration to local community members. I'm not sure the particulars of what, but he sort of inspires them in some way. He finds purpose in his life beyond music PR.
I'll tell you what happens, because you may not have seen this bit, but I actually made a gif of it and put it on Twitter. He gives a speech in a town hall because they've got to shut down a road for like a week to work on it, and there's a town hall meeting, and Ben Affleck is actually, before the town hall meeting kicks off, in one of those hilarious, you know, movie moments, he goes, hey, it's a street, it's 3 days. How angry could people be? Cut to the town hall meeting, and George Carlin's line is, you were saying? Which is real funny, because if you pick apart like what that actually is, George Carlin's been sitting on that line for, you know, at least a day or two, and it just would come out of nowhere, and you'd be like, sorry, yeah. What?
He would have had to walk around with his son, Ben Affleck, going, ah, every time either of them wanted to say something, he would have to hold the thought that he could the context could remain relevant for him to say, you were saying.
And they're raising a baby together. Do you know how hard that would be? You got to coordinate a lot for that around dinner time and nappies.
Yeah. Did they have some fun and games with the notion of this sort of two generations of single men raising a young girl in the modern day?
No. No, they don't. No.
There's all sorts of capers, you know, at your disposal there.
This montage that they have is Ben Affleck taking the stage because he's like, hey, I used to talk crap and music publicity, maybe I could bring these people over. And he does, in a speech that Kevin Smith has not bothered to write. So there's just a montage, music plays with him gesturing to the crowd and winning them over the course of, you know, 18 seconds. It's pretty lazy.
Yeah,
but then it works.
It's montages are so good, but a montage of the thing is that the actual action of what he's doing, like, this isn't to Kevin Smith's credit, because this is sort of laziness on two counts, as opposed to, well, fair enough, it didn't warrant a speech. But like, it's of no consequence him finding his feet in that setting, right? Like, the real heart of the story is him.
No, it kind of is. This is why you got to watch the movie, guy. And I know you tried, but this is why you got to watch the movie, because this is his awakening, or his reawakening, that he's like, I got to get back in the game. This is my calling. This is what I'm all about. And so this kind of kicks off a sequence of events where he keeps applying for jobs, and he's got this reputation now where he's the one who dissed the Will Fresh Smith. Prince of Bel-Air, and no one will hire him until eventually they do. And all the while he's trying to raise his little girl. Did you see the bit with the girl
hired, though. Yeah, I saw them comparing bodily parts, and then Ben Affleck sort of sheepishly offers to give the bird and the bees speech, and then the way it had been edited down into these small clips after that, I saw them at the movie store when he is with Liv Tyler, who's sort of quite a cool, confident video store clerk, which is like, that's a tie to Kevin Smith's films, right? Because Clerks was his calling card.
Absolutely. So here's Liv Tyler's character. She works at the video store, and she's a college student. I think she's 26, they say in the movie. And she's doing some research on people's sexual habits. And so Ben Affleck goes in there and rents a porno from the video shop, can you believe? Do you remember such a thing? And so she kind of goes, oh, do you mind if I ask you a few questions about the fact that you've just rented a porno? And he's like, I guess that's fine. And so she starts grilling him about stuff. He freaks out, and he accidentally gets a movie featuring bisexual men. And then he gets very embarrassed when he brings it to the counter, and Liv Tyler's like, is this the movie you wanted? And he's like, no, get me some lady stuff.
Sexuality is a spectrum, unless you're Ben Affleck. In real life and as whatever character you're portraying, you are never to come up even close to the line of having any curiosity in anything other than heteronormative sex. And so, them's are the fucking rules.
So Liv Tyler chases him down at his... Oh, that's right. It comes out. So she's like, hey, does your wife know you're renting porno? Da-da-da-da-da. And he never kind of corrects her. And then the little girl comes up with her movie. And Liv Tyler's like, you know, where's your mommy sort of thing? And she's like, oh, my mum died during childbirth. And Liv Tyler's like, oh, no. So then she actually chases down Ben Affleck at his house later. And then they get a coffee where she's just asking him a whole bunch of questions about when the last time he had sex was.
His sex life. That's right. And he has not had sex since the death of his wife. Seven years. And he's very embarrassed to say it.
So Liv Tyler grabs him by the hand. Sorry, you go, Guy.
Well, I just think that that was good acting from Liv Tyler. Like, I really warmed to her in that scene, especially before that, before she finds out he hasn't had sex in 7 years.
Her New Jersey accent isn't perfect, I will say that, and nowhere is it more apparent than that scene, that little tete-a-tete.
Yeah, but she says something where she says, I'm crushing on you now or something. I'm kind of crushing on you. Yeah. What was that? What does he say to warrant that reaction?
he goes, fuck, I can't remember. It's something about the kind of fidelity with which he's treating the relationship, even though his, you know, ex-wife is... Do you say ex-wife?
Yeah.
His widow. His widower?
No, yeah.
No, he's a widower. His widow.
Remember. Yeah, but anyway, when she finds out he has had sex in 7 years, she says, well, we're going out of here, and leads him back towards either his or her house, I think his house, to burst the dam, to finally let that man have some coitus after 7 long years of solo masturbation.
No coitus.
You gotta
get the coitus after the no coitus. You have a period of no coitus, then you get coitus in there.
That's right. He's tired of masturbating to straight down the line penis and vagina pornography.
He doesn't give a shit, though. Ben Affleck is very unmoved by this proposal. I feel like Liv Tyler is driving this boat.
That's like one of the things which I think creates misconceptions about America and Americans is movies and moments in movies like this. When you're younger and you're watching them, you don't have such a, you know, an analytical mind. But it's like the characters take such big swings, you know, and people act normal in reaction to them.
Mm.
And it creates like a warped sense of how the world is, you know, where you suddenly think if you walk around telling people you haven't had sex in 7 years, they're going to be like, well, don't worry about that. We're going to have sex right now. And, you know, in my experience,
do you reckon
the world
the world would be a better or worse place if we acted more like that?
I think better.
Better on the whole, but there's a lot of high stakes room for error, I think, with people taking big swings like that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a huge, you're increasing the margin for error by tenfold, but if the entire world is more like that, you know, if the entire world suddenly starts treating sex with less, not reverence, but you know, if it's like, you know, it's part of the terror of sex when you haven't had it and are learning about it is, you know, it's put on such a pedestal. It's the great unknown, and it just, the longer you don't have it, the more importance it has.
You've got to stop putting that pussy on a pedestal.
That's exactly right. That's one of the characters from The 40-Year-Old Virgin, as I recall.
Yeah, that's what it was. I forgot.
Yeah, but anyway, they go back to his house. This is what I've got from my gleaning, so just step in wherever I'm wrong. They are in the shower about to fool around when young Gertie comes in, the daughter, and busts them. And then in a very funny comic turn, the tables turn entirely. And suddenly young Gertie's giving a birds and the bees talk to Liv Tyler and Ben Affleck.
She says, what are your intentions with my dad? Which is a speech that she's mirroring from Ben Affleck giving it moments ago to her after he walked in on these two curious little kids showing each other their bodies. What's going on out there? Is that a sore?
So glad you asked, yeah. This
what's happening?
Well, I'm staying at a friend's house, Kobe. And there was a very torrential rain in Los Angeles a few days ago. And there's like a built-in AC unit that's half in the wall, half out the wall in the lounge.
Mm.
And during the torrential rain, some water had somehow found its way beneath the AC unit and leaked into the house. So I said to Kobe, hey, just so you know, some water's leaked in here. And Kobe said, oh, okay, that's no good. I'll tell my landlord. And he did, and I corresponded with the landlord, who assured me that yesterday afternoon, someone would be around to fix up the exterior so that there wouldn't be any leaks given another torrential downpour.
That's great.
I sort of scheduled elements of my life accordingly, namely recording quite an audio-dependent podcast on the Saturday morning. So
No, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. I like it. I like the sense of we're in the world, you know? There's some world-building elements going on. We've got context. We've got background. It's pretty loud, so I feel for you.
It's not quiet.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But all of this to say, look, you know, Jersey Girl continues along from there. The Gertie very skillfully blackmails everything she wants out of her dad, whose desire to return to the working world of New York sort of begins to threaten their burgeoning connection, to the point that his big job interview scheduled for the same day as a dance recital that she appears to care about. She loves musicals, I guess.
Yeah, it's more of a singing recital. Everyone wants to do Cats, and everyone does do Cats, except they do Sweeney Todd, because Ben Affleck accidentally takes her to Sweeney Todd not knowing how violent it is, and then she does a scene from that featuring some of George Carlin's mates from the, you know, the shop,
yeah,
the company. And Liv Tyler does like a really long performance in it, which I found fine, but weird. It's like, hey, man, this is the kid's gig. This isn't for you. Get the fuck out of there. You're hogging the spotlight.
But, yeah, pretty much the sort of the crown, the sweet cameo and the crowning moment of the film is Ben Affleck has gone, he's had a blow up with young Gertie. He's gone to the job interview in New York on the day of the recital, and he's sitting in the waiting room, and he comes across none other than Will Smith, the very man who sunk his career unknowingly by being late.
Well, he did it to himself. Will Smith didn't do shit.
Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, Will Smith doesn't know. He doesn't have any of this context that, you know, this is how it had happened. And they just have a heart to heart as two men, as fathers of children, and That's all the information Ben Affleck needs to say. I actually don't want to go to this job interview. Do you know what I want to do? I want to play around in the dirt with my daughter. And it's,
thank you, Saw, punctuating that point. There's no moment where Will Smith and Ben Affleck address that he's the guy.
No, that's it. You've got to feel like that's, you know, that's meant to be twee, a conscious decision that's meant to.
I was waiting for that moment where he was like, aren't you the guy who called me a massive impending failure?
How would Will Smith know about that, though?
Because it was famous. Everyone in the music industry knew about it. He keeps going to job interviews, and they're like, oh, my God, you're that famous fucking dude. Plus, he was in a room of 300 journalists. You don't think they would have reported on that? Would have been a big story guy. You know, you used to read the entertainment mags. It would have made it in there.
But think about the trajectory of Will Smith's career between 1994 and 2004, wherein he has become such a star. You know, the news cycle isn't so dependent on tweets and, you know, the internet isn't as prevalent in everyone's lives. Like, stories like that would come and go, much more likely. And people doubted Will Smith before in his career and would have continued to do so. I feel like for maybe the people who were in the room, the journalists, you know, that was a marquee event. That was something that's in their memories as unforgettable. It was huge, you know, this huge PR guy doing the most unthinkable PR gaffe.
He freaked out.
But beyond that, Will Smith wouldn't know nor care.
Nah, I totally disagree. I reckon he would. I don't think he'd care that much because Will Smith's a cool guy and he keeps his eye on the prize. But I think he'd definitely know about it. They treat that moment as like huge
in the movie. There's some information I'd like to give which tie this movie to Zhili because Jersey Girl was released 1 year later. Mm-hmm. In 2004. And I think the reason that our Patreon pals wanted us to watch these movies together is because, you know, it's kind of remembered as this epic and unthinkable double box office bomb where a real life couple starred in two forthcoming movies together and both of them were catastrophic. And if you're in the marketing department, that's your worst dream to know that Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez are in your movie coming out in 2004. And before they do that, they're in a movie in 2003, which is described as the worst movie of all time.
Was that Zhili?
Yeah.
Was that first? Okay.
Yes. And so what wound up happening is there was a huge scramble from the team at Jersey Girl after the bomb that was Zhili, where they were like, oh, fuck, we can't market this as a Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez vehicle. And I'm on the IMDb now, so this is what I misremembered from earlier about the marketing materials and Jennifer Lopez dying quickly. So they removed all images of J-Lo from all promotional materials. They pushed back the release date to create separation between Zhili and Jersey Girl.
Oh, my word.
And they publicly revealed before the movie that Jennifer Lopez's character dies within 15 minutes from childbirth.
Shit.
That is a full-blown panic attack.
That is. It's ironically sort of mimicking the wild movements that Ben Affleck is making in his make-believe publicity career in the film.
Absolutely.
They're all over the map with that one. Good on them, though. Crisis management has got to be, as long as it's a movie and not something that actually matters, so fun. Although I guess everything matters when it's your job. But something like that happens, you're like, oh my God, we did not see this coming. Yeah. But it turns out the last movie of this twin set of releases is legitimately one of the worst pieces of art that's been released into the world so far. We got to make some changes.
That's the thing, man.
I love it.
You've got to think about, I mean, and I assume this is why we were told to watch these two movies. But
people love J-Lo.
People love J-Lo. But think about Zhili. Think about not just the fact that you watched that movie on a computer in your studio, but just the monumental disappointment that would be going to a movie with the two biggest movie stars in the world. And that, whatever it was.
Was what met you.
Unrolling itself in front of you. Like, Zhili is just, honestly, one of the worst pieces of cinema.
Let's rip into it.
It is.
Let's up the can. What is it? First of all, what is it? Tell me what this movie is about. What is it? What happens in the plot?
It's Ben Affleck plays a hitman named Larry Zhili, pronounced like really, which he has to address. I mean, how can you name a movie?
Just change the name of the film. If you got to do that much work for it, you are allowed to change it. Just change the name.
Absolutely. So he's a hitman who is sort of in the pocket of quite a lousy boss, seems like a sort of B grade mob boss, and the B grade mob boss's actions are catching up with him, and he's freaking out. He's actually under prosecution right now by a district attorney or something like that. And so his panic attack is he commissions his hitman, Larry Zhili, to kidnap the sort of developmentally challenged younger brother of the district attorney and hold him hostage.
I did not connect those two things together.
Oh, my God. What did you watch?
I really watched it, too, or at least I thought I did. Fuck, no, I know, but like I missed that. Bit I can't. Of connective tissue. I mean,
even with that connective tissue, this movie was abysmal. But I can't imagine what kept you tethered to the screen for 2 hours.
It was just like there was a hitman who was Ben Affleck who kidnaps this guy, and then Jennifer Lopez, who's another assassin, who comes to help out because Ben Affleck's doing such a bad job at his hitmaning, and. I didn't really get that we were told as an audience why it was him, but there was a reason, but it was being hidden from us. So this is quite the revelation.
I just can't imagine that movie without knowing that, because what you wind up watching must have been so infuriating. You're like, why?
It was pretty crazy, but I just chalked it up to the fact that I'd heard so much about how bad Geely was. I was like, yeah, I'm sure this is just part of it. They're not very good storytellers. I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to like keep something a little bit secret and have it as a twist reveal at the end. That's all good. Hide a little bit of information, but hide the sausage from the audience. Nice one. Tip of the hat to you filmmakers. But no, I've missed a couple lines at some point.
So the thing is that all of this sort of mafioso hitman plotting is barely a construct around which the real meat and potatoes of the movie, the thing we're meant to care about, be invested in, which is the will they or won't they element of J-Lo and Ben Affleck. So the B-grade mob boss who's commissioned this kidnapping of the brother of the district attorney does not trust Larry Geely. He thinks he's a slightly incompetent hitman, so he gets another person in the form of J-Lo to keep an eye on him. So it's two hit people who don't know one another, have no connection to one another, keeping an eye on each other because of how important it is that this negotiation tactic, which the movie in itself kind of addresses later, two tremendous cameos that come out of absolutely fucking nowhere.
Very big.
Chris Walken comes in early in the piece as a cop and immediately is acting so hard and so much better than those around him, it calls to attention just how bad what you're sitting through is. Like, he walks into the room, it's like sitting through a really bad improv show or a play, and you're like, oh my God, 2 hours of this. And then someone with something steps out and you think, yes, I hope this character sticks around for a very long time.
Sadly, not.
Christopher Walken's cameo is reduced to playing the worst cop in the world who has motive and is like so close to being on the right trail of like cracking this case open, saving us all the embarrassment of sitting through the entire movie. He comes around, he essentially accuses Ben Affleck of having kidnapped the brother, who he is through one more door, and he also, this character, the brother, is revealed to have verbal Tourette's, yet they do not, like, I feel like they tried to milk one early gag out of it when he kidnaps him, and then it is not returned to.
No.
But considering the stakes of the movie, you know, the idea of verbal Tourette's occurring when Christopher Walken is in the house, surely.
That's your moment.
If you're so certain that this kidnapping's taken place, look around.
It's weird detective work to walk into someone's house and just give a speech, but not kind of check for the thing.
And then leave, and then never follow up on the speech or the case again.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben Affleck was so sloppy in the way he kidnapped this guy. He walked into his care facility, like, took him, and just didn't check him out or anything. Just, like, walked in, sort of, you know, talked to people, took him, and that was it. If Christopher Walken left that house and decided to go and check in at the care facility, say, hey, did anyone come here? He'd get a profile matching Ben Affleck's character and go back to the house and say, I know you did it. But apparently, Christopher Walken walked out of that apartment and immediately retired from the force. He said, I don't have it anymore. I can't chase these cases. My instincts are off. I'm off the team.
He just took it. He handed in his own badge and gun.
Absolutely. So then we're left with this romantic comedy between Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez playing out in the company of, as you observed, Doug from The Hangover.
Doug from The Hangover, folks.
Playing someone who is differently abled for 2 hours.
Yeah, and he doesn't do a great job, I would say that. It's not good acting work. man, it wasn't, yeah, it wasn't a stunning performance. I'm actually going through some of my tweets from yesterday about it because I'd live tweeted both movies, actually, but I did a better job of keeping up with Zhili.
One of the most disgusting things I've seen in the history of cinema is the sex scene between Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck.
Why is it so gross? Because I felt that as well. I wanted to throw up, and I don't know. I was like, Jennifer Lopez, absolutely gorgeous. Ben Affleck, very beautiful man. These are two sexy people having a sexy time. Why is filming it making me want to hurl?
Because the scripting and the performance that leads up to them having sex is quite disgusting. Like, there's one scene where Ben Affleck's character is hilarious in this entire movie. He is the most pig-headed piece of shit in the world. It is unbelievable. And Ben Affleck, I don't know what decision he made every day he got on set, but it seems to me like it was the decision to not try at all. So
it's a weird middle ground, like, though, because he's very forceful with his not trying. Like, he's going...
Absolutely.
He's going big in the wrong direction. It's weird. It's really weird. But
he Jennifer Lopez, he makes an advance one night. She's staying at his house. She's going to sleep on the floor. He says, hey, look, very professional, but if you want to sleep in my half of the bed, because they're working together on this job now until it's completed. Mm. If you want to take my half of the bed, no worries. He hits on her. She says, I'm a lesbian. And he goes, oh, okay. And then eventually the tension's ratcheting up between them, and he sort of starts saying that the penis is perfect. There's a huge disadvantage to being a lesbian, which is you don't have the, you know, apex of biological evolution, which is his dick. And then there's a scene where Jennifer Lopez sort of pointedly explains the appeal of a vagina by equating it to a human mouth while
the mouth
performing
is the twin
pretty
sister.
Incredible.
The mouth is the twin sister of the vagina. That's her quote.
Incredible yoga. And Ben Affleck sort of absorbs this anyway. Eventually they're in the bedroom, and this context is all ringing, you know, so loud in your mind because it's so recent. And they kiss, and then,
which is fucked because she's a lesbian. It's like the filmmakers don't really know what a lesbian is.
Well, she's not. She's bisexual, you know.
I thought she was a lesbian. And they're just bad at telling a story.
I don't know. I think there was an element of her saying she, in that initial advance he makes, she says she's a lesbian to temper his expectations. But anyway,
well, that's
they
shitty.
Kiss. And then eventually they make out, and he's bragged about how good he is at cunnilingus before. After making out and sort of, you know, both of them detecting that things are going to advance, possibly to full-blown intercourse, Jennifer Lopez lays down upon the bed, opens her legs, gestures towards her vagina, and says, it's turkey time. Gobble. Gobble.
Fucking immortal. There are a few lines in cinema that will be remembered for the ages. You shall not pass, shaken, not stirred. And it's turkey time. Gobble, gobble. You could carve them into stones and rest them in the earth for when the nuclear fallout takes us all from this mortal plane. I want those words to remain for any future species to discover. It's turkey time. Gobble, gobble.
Yeah. After which you watch the sort of, you know, the soft... it's not an explicit scene, you know. It's more like it's more emotive than biological. But they spend quite a long and lingering shot, sort of, on Ben Affleck's wooden cum face.
Mm.
So he is in the throes of ecstasy, and the sort of forceful, not trying style of acting he's experimenting with for as long as this movie was shooting means that you look into the cold, dead eyes of a man who is simulating pleasure while his real-life partner and partner in the movie is having sex with him.
It's a style of acting that I'd like to call thumbing it in. After a friend of mine, Andy, he would use this term quite liberally at one point in his life. Thumbing it in was when you did not have an erect penis, so you would use your thumb to thumb your genitals into the genitals of your sexual partner. So thumbing it in is when it's like, look, it's no good, but we're going to get it done. So that face that you've described, that is the face of an actor thumbing it in.
Oh, man. Honestly, I can't remember the time code, but even if you can get onto Indian Netflix and click forward to the point at which they're having sex.
If you get onto Indian Netflix, folks, that's the instruction.
It is so good. There's another amazing bit where Jennifer Lopez sort of tells off this group of either school kids or bikies, maybe a combination of both, and sort of manages to de-escalate what looks like quite a tense situation that Ben Affleck and his alpha dog character has created with these guys, because they're playing music loudly at an outdoor taqueria.
This was great. This is a great, great moment in the film. Ben Affleck gets a hot head. He's about to go and intervene and smash their stereo to bits. But Jennifer Lopez is like, hey, this is the kind of situation where we'd want to keep a low profile. But they start some shit anyway. There's a couple of insults that get hurled. And then Jennifer Lopez knows she's got to quieten this down. So she goes over there and just starts talking at them about the kung fu that she knows. It's actually not kung fu. It's a different kind of martial art that she knows. It's like, it almost sounds like she's describing Krav Maga or whatever that thing is called, that Israeli martial art. But anyway, she describes a situation where she knows a technique of jamming your thumb into someone's eye so that it liquefies, and then with your index finger, you very quickly snap into the socket, grab what's left, pull it out, and that removes your visual cortex from your brain using suction with the force of which you're grabbing the optic nerve. And by doing that, you forget what sight is. Like, you not only can't see anymore,
you don't just lose the ability to,
you lose the ability to remember what sight is.
Because what a lot of people don't know is that all of your memories are embedded in your actual eyeballs.
Well, here's the thing, man. So I put this on Twitter because I was live tweeting everything else. And it started a lot of discussion. I messaged my wife, who's a doctor. It's, you know, it's pretty specialty field.
I saw
a general practitioner, but I said,
the correspondence you shared was, you said, well, yeah, what did you say to Zoe?
I said, Zoe, if you rip someone's visual cortex out, would they lose their ability to remember visual memories? And do you think you could do that through ripping someone's eye out hard enough? And
she texts back saying, what are you up to?
Which is fair. It's a fair question to that. But anyway, this started a quite lively conversation on Twitter between some people, not least of which seem to be a few people who do neuro stuff. They know about the brain. And the consensus has been that, in fact, yes, if you remove the visual cortex, it is possible, and according to one guy, it has even happened in the past, where you would forget visual memories. Like, you couldn't kind of access them in the same way, but there is no way that is connected in any way, shape, or form to the optic nerve or to the eye. So they didn't completely fuck it up.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Nearly, but not quite. But that in and of itself is an incredible scene, but the topper, the kicker, the cherry on this perfect piece of cinema as Jennifer Lopez walks ahead like you've been dealt with, and then Ben Affleck, as though he's had anything to do with it, stands up, puts his leather jacket on, walks past them. They have a laptop out for some reason. This movie is in 2003. I don't even know, unless they've got Windows Media Player, that you can do anything on a laptop in the wild. He picks up the laptop, says, cool laptop, and then snaps it over his knee and says, suckmydick.com, and grabs his genitals and thrusts and walks away. It is the funniest, coolest brag.
Smashing someone's computer and then saying, suckmydick.com.
I would love to do that. I think it is so baller. In fact, you know,
what has happened in your upbringing, guy, that you think that's a cool thing to do?
Well, it's just, it's like such a loose, his character the whole time is just like this loose grab bag of things that teenagers think are cool. Like, he does this speech where he's meant to sound like a tough guy, which it's honestly like someone gave a bot, you know, a handful of words to try and recreate a monologue from Glengarry Glen Ross.
It's fucking wild. It is so dumb. He's just like, I'm the original fucking gangster's gangster. And it goes on for about a half a minute. He's just,
you want to be a gangster? Get down on your knees and look upon the pearls that emanate from my awesomeness.
Good
but
memory.
Like all of his character traits are like this. They're like, I just think his character is so funny. It's honestly like it's like someone was like to a 13-year-old boy who desperately wanted to be cool. Can you please create a character? Can you please? It's the Homer Simpson of cars, of characters.
The Homer Simpson car of characters. That's a pretty good description. It's what you think you want in a character if you don't know anything about movies.
Yes.
I don't know, man. This whole movie's so, it's so crazy and so fucked. Sheely's really a wild ride, and I would actually recommend people watch it. It's so hard to get, though. I had to buy a VPN and then rent it from YouTube while pretending I was, I think, in America.
Oh, man.
YouTube.
Did you have to use an American credit card?
How did I pull that off? I don't know. I think it let me use my New Zealand issued credit card, which is good. Amazon didn't let me do that because I did.
But using an American VPN.
Yeah.
I'm in America and I couldn't get it on a New Zealand credit card.
But that's Amazon. You got, folks, listen to Tim and Guy. You got to try and get it off YouTube, maybe. Like, you pay for it on YouTube.
I was on YouTube.
Oh, and that wasn't
both
working.
Both YouTube and Amazon were like, unless you're using an American credit card, even if you're in America, you cannot rent these movies.
Oh, then I don't know. Well, yeah.
Look. India Netflix have it.
So get on that, folks.
And it's well worth the trip.
What else to say about Zhili, though? There is a lot in it. It's a very long movie.
Well, I think there's not just a cameo from Christopher Walken. I think the most important thing that must be addressed is there is another cameo in this film.
This is the best bit of the film, undeniably.
Much later in the piece, in the form of a ponytail-swinging, wig-wearing, gun-toting Al Pacino.
Fish-loving. Apartment-dwelling.
He's the boss to the B-grade mafia boss.
He's the real big fish.
Yeah, he's Ben Affleck's mega boss. And he's loosely channeling his character from Any Given Sunday. Like, he gives like one of those sort of gravel-voiced, high-energy speeches.
A gangster pep talk. He's talking about thumbs for talks about thumbs for about a minute, and then shoots a guy clean in the head who is his underling. In the pecking order, it goes Al Pacino, the underling, and then Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck are kind of at the same tier at the bottom of that pyramid. So Al Pacino, in a moment of really showing everyone in the room who's boss, boom, puts a bullet right. This is kind of a cool line. He says, hey, you want to go to med school? And the guy goes, med school? Boom, puts a bullet in him, and he goes, yeah, those students, they need to learn from cadavers. I can't remember the exact line, but that's the cut and thrust of it. This is kind of fucking cool. You shouldn't go shooting people, folks. God, I can't recommend that strongly enough to just not do that. But Al Pacino does it, and it's cool because it's in a movie, and he's a gangster. And then there's brain matter that falls into the fish tank, and there's a close-up shot of these exotic fish eating this guy's brains. And then the kind of speech goes on, this duologue between he and mainly Jennifer Lawrence while this guy's just dead, bleeding next to them. Which, for all the other bad bits of this film, this scene I actually kind of liked. It's got a lot of cool shit going on.
Yeah. Mainly
Al Pacino. He's the cool shit.
It's... Oh, no. Oh, no.
What's happened?
Ugh. Oh. I've spilt a juice. No. Look, this is a big spill.
God, my God.
I've got to get a cloth.
You're wrapping up the podcast recording of a movie you saw mainly in clips because some juice got spilled.
No.
This feels like an appropriate end.
I saw all of Zhili. I have a lot of hot takes. If you want a rough idea of how bad Geely is, they literally had to take one of the biggest movie stars in the world, Jennifer Lopez, off of a movie poster because it was so bad they thought that her property was toxic. If you want to know how bad the movie is, Jennifer Lopez, one of the top 20 most famous people in the world, they publicly released information that her character in the next movie dies within 15 minutes, so you don't have to worry about her and Ben Affleck acting against each other. That is a movie worth watching. I've really got to get a cloth.
Where was that passion? I'm going to end the podcast on this guy, and it's the tweet that I sent at the end of my live Twitter experience watching these two films.
Well, get it out fucking fast because the juice is spreading. Go, well,
I can do this bit.
I'm tethered to the computer.
Go get a cloth. So in conclusion, Geely, it's a movie. The IPCC informs us the ocean will start to take our species back out of existence within 40 years. I think this is well justified. And as sad as it is to kiss goodbye to all of human progress, it's been a hell of a ride. Can I say fuck you to all the Patreon people who voted this in? You are a unique brand of evil. We will see you in the next one of these.
Thank you. Good night.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.